Hi, everyone. Welcome to Potluck Food Talks. I'm Eric, and I'm here with my man, Phil Walter. And we're going to talk about pursuit of excellence and cooking and the culinary worlds.
Yeah.
What the first thing you think about when you hear that expression?
I think it is the really kind of that sentiment that I feel is very unique to our profession. And it's definitely one of the biggest reasons why I started cooking in the first place. I wanted to, like I'd spoken to Xander about it before, I wanted to do something where I could strive to be a little bit better every day. And yeah, and I spent most of my career doing that, sometimes in a very unhealthy way and sometimes in a really, really fulfilling way. Actually, I think it's one of the things that makes this job what it is and why people want to do it. Is this constant delving into what you're doing.
For me, it comes to mind, well, there is this book from Charlie Trotter. It's called Lessons in Excellence, which I recommend very much. He has Lessons in Excellence, Lessons in Service, and Lessons in Wine Service. The last one I didn't read, but I don't remember in which one of them he says that he looks for people that have a religious approach to work, okay? And that also brings to me when I listen to the episode where Xander interviews you and you're telling about how you started cooking, and you said that Buddhism and Zen philosophy really caught your attention and you saw something about it in cooking because everything was so like volatile that you cook something and then it's gone. And I don't know, I think like all of these things are like puzzle pieces of a larger picture when we talk about this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think it's almost like when you meet people that have the same passion and that see the same beauty in what you're doing, it's almost like you meet a brother from another mother, you know? It's almost like you meet somebody from like a secret cult, because there's people that cook, and that's totally fine, you know? Cooking for feeding people is a very noble pursuit, but you know, you have that in everything, you know, you have people who make music and they can play an instrument pretty well. And then you have people that feel it, you know, that really feel it with their whole being. And it's just a little bit different. And when you come across people like that, it's very inspiring.
Yeah. And I guess it has also to do when you see something properly executed, you know, it's like an aesthetic experience, right? You enjoy the beauty of it. It's like,
yeah,
nice, you know, like, you know, and if it's not, it's the exact opposite. It's like fucking bullshit. I hate this shit. You know, I don't want to see this like this.
Yeah.
And that's why chefs are such maniacs, because you get this emotional contrast of beauty and ugliness in your work. If something is not beautiful, then it's ugly and you don't want it to be ugly.
Yeah, totally. No, absolutely. You're absolutely right. And it just reminds me of a conversation I had with somebody that I worked with not too long ago, that I was trying to explain to how it feels like if you have a really bad service. And she was kind of like, well, you know, but like bad days happen and like you have to be able to go home and switch off. And I was like, no, you don't understand. Like, of course, like you're right. But the feeling that I have when a service goes bad and you send things out that you don't feel are right, it crushes me. It really, really crushes me.
It's like if you're a surgeon and somebody died in your operation table, you know, like it's like that. You'll have that on your shoulders for at least a few days.
That's an intense comparison, man. But you're right. It does feel like that. And I guess that's just what comes with being really passionate about something. And I don't know, for me, it was never about sort of like, you know, this feeling of failure that you have. It was never about anything else but me, you know? Like, I feel like I let myself down and I felt like, where did all my time and effort go if it resulted in this? All day long, I'm trying to chase I'm trying to chase the dragon. I'm trying to, you know, make my deadline. And then I get there and it gets fucked up. And then, right, other people are involved also, right? Sometimes you fuck up, but sometimes other people fuck up. And then all your hard work results in something that's mediocre because of other people, which then becomes a really difficult situation. Also, how do you deal with that? Right? Because it's one thing if you're a chef de partie and you work with other people and it can be like, oh, fuck, you know, on my side, the saucier, the fish was perfect. The sauce was perfect, blah, blah, blah. But the entremetier fucked up the garnish. So fuck that guy, right? But if you're, you know, a sous chef or a head chef, it's your responsibility to keep everybody together. So if somebody fucks up, of course, it's, you know, their problem. But also, what could you have done to improve that? It's a very complex scenario.
I also think about repetition. You know, like if you think about the pursuit of excellence, repetition is like an absolute concept that is binded to it, you know?
Yeah.
Because doing the same thing every day and enjoying the beauty of it every time, and not only every day, but many times a day, you know, like every time, like a very beautiful plate. And also, I think I haven't worked in restaurants for a while, but I remember resetting your mind, you know, like every time you have the same plate again and you need to start doing the same thing again, learning how to look at it as if you were doing it for the first time and learning how to cook or plate as if it was for your most beloved one person, like having that kind of resetting and having a blank mind when you're doing these kind of things. It was also key for me to keep that mood, you know, like ongoing.
I think what you said there is such a beautiful like way of thinking about it. It's like, you know, seeing the beauty in the stuff every day and multiple times a day. If you manage to do that, and if you practice that, because it's a practice, right? Unless you're like a very, you know, special sort of person, then you have to practice that. You have to get yourself into that mode. And then you can take that even further where you try to see the beauty in all the things that you're doing. If it's peeling a mushroom, you know, if it's, you know, peeling the apple, if it's making a potato puree, if, you know, it's cleaning the fish, you know, like simple things, picking herbs, you can step back and enjoy the beauty and the enjoyment of what you're doing, and also in trying to do it excellently in every single thing that you're doing. And that is where I feel like the religious aspect comes in, if you approach it religiously, because that's, you know, like what I'm saying is not easily done, I would say. But if you manage to do that, how incredibly fulfilling that must be, you know? And sometimes we manage to do that, and I 100% believe that the end result of what we're doing, of the work that we're doing, is then impacted in such a positive way. And that's obviously, we're all human and we can't always do this because we have bad days and somebody, some crackhead shouted at us on the train on our way to work. And, you know, I don't know.
I think it's also key, like to have like a proper environment to develop this talents and this approach to cooking, is that the whole kitchen has to be designed for something like that. You know, if you're like you're saying, peeling some baby carrots really carefully, and then I don't know, like you have a ticket with a room service and the owner of the restaurant comes in and asks you to do something that has nothing to do with your job, and then the whole thing becomes a mess. It's just counterproductive for everything, you know, like not just for your mental health, but also for the quality of the restaurant, also for the whole team working as an engine, like for many, many things. I think that's something that has to be taken into consideration from the very beginning, from the very foundational conceptualization of a place.
That's very, very true. I think so many people forget that. So many people don't, who run restaurants and operate restaurants, I'm not going to say any names. they forget that and they don't understand that. And they think like, hey, we can just, it's fine, right? Like, it's okay. You can just do this quick room service ticket. And it's like, yeah, sure, I can. And yeah, it's okay. We just do this. It's okay. We just do that. It's okay. We just open an hour longer. It's okay. We just open an hour earlier. It's like, yeah, what's an hour? Yeah, what's an hour? An hour is a lot, you know, and things need to, we need to set things into motion. We really need to think about what it is that we want. Do we want more or do we want better?
Yeah. And also, do you want to have like a super large rotation of staff, people coming and leaving every 3 months, or you want people to stay for years working for you? I say that, like, if you have that as a goal from the very beginning, then you need to think differently of all of these things we're just saying, you know, like if you want people to stay for a few years working with you.
Absolutely. One person that I think of when it comes to pursuit of excellence is somebody that I've not worked with, but I've been following him for a long time, and he's recently got his third Michelin star. As we talked about him earlier, Daniel Calvert from Cezanne in Tokyo. That for me is really like, I've been following this guy since he was in Hong Kong. He had 1 star at a restaurant called Bellon, where he was doing like fairly classic French cooking with, you know, like a lot of like local influence. Like he was making like drunken chicken and stuff like that. And he then moved on to Tokyo, opened Cezanne, straight away got 2 Michelin stars. And now he's got his 3rd one. And that is really a kitchen where, you know, like per se, and, you know, the French Laundry and Cezanne and Benu, all these kitchens where you kind of look at the way they work, 11 Madison Park, and you're sort of like, yeah, they're really in pursuit of excellence there. They have a culture. They have a religious approach. They show up every day and they just do their thing. And it, like a knife on a sharpening stone, it gets refined and refined and refined and refined until it's laser sharp.
I can think of this book from Erich Fromm called The Art of Loving. He was like a psychologist from the 60s, like German Jewish American. And what I remember, I read that book when I was a teenager, and I could summarize it and like, well, the way he approaches the concept of love is that he says love is a practice and something that you have to train and to do proactively towards things. It could be a person, it could be cooking, you know, it could be anything. And he says it has like 4 elements. And if you apply those 4 elements into something, then you are basically loving it, and that thing will somehow reward you for it. Okay. And the things are care, knowledge, respect, and responsibility. Like the combination of those 4. If you apply this to learning how to cook better or cooking better, like executing a specific dish, or I don't know, running a restaurant or serving a table, then this thing will reward you like inwardly.
That's really beautiful, man. And I can totally relate to that. I can absolutely relate to that. And I really love the fact like loving is something that you have to do proactively. I think that's super true. And that's kind of how you should approach cooking also, you know, proactively. And proactively also looking for the beauty in it and loving it. I've been watching this show. It's called La Grande Maison Tokyo. It's on Netflix also. And that is also a show that is about the pursuit of excellence in a really beautiful way. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen cook shows lately, but I feel like this one. And there is also like a Korean show also on Netflix that I've heard very good comments about it.
Yeah, they're both really good. Culinary Wars, I think you mean. They're both really, really good. They're both very different. So this La Grande Maison Tokyo, it's like a Japanese telenovela. And just to kind of break the story down, it's about a Japanese chef in Paris who has 2 Michelin stars and he gets disgraced. So he basically poisons a customer. Nobody wants to hire him. Jump to 3 years later, he's like basically living on the streets. And he meets this like middle-aged woman who takes him back to Tokyo and wants to open a restaurant with him. He's a very difficult character. And so they open this restaurant and they want to get 3 Michelin stars. So I started watching the show and I thought it was going to be like very lighthearted. And then the more I watched the show, the more I got hooked. And the more you saw about the cooking, the more I realized that whoever was advising them on the food had a really intricate and deep understanding of cooking. And I watched the whole show. It's only like 11 episodes. And I was like, man, the show was so fucking good, especially in the end. It gets really good, especially like cooking wise. There's dishes in there where you're like, man, that's so smart, you know? And then after I watched that, I started watching it again because I wanted to watch it a second time. And I made a little bit of research and I realized that the two main restaurants in this show, one is like very modern Japanese and the other one is like very kind of old schooly modern French with Japanese ingredients. The French restaurant, all the dishes that they serve, well, most of them, they're dishes from Quintessence in Tokyo.
Okay. Yeah. Like if you say that the dishes are clever, there is probably like a good consultant behind it.
100%. I mean, Quintessence in Tokyo is, you know, arguably the most infamous, famous 3-Michelin-star Japanese-French restaurant in Japan. And there are such sort of like really like finely tuned dishes in there with like little, they're simple, but they have these twists and these techniques where you're like, oh my God, if I think about it, it's so smart. And yeah, that is also a really beautiful show where they, you know, in the previous episode, we talked about the 10 commandments from Nouvelle Cuisine. They're sort of like, yeah, thou shall not be, what was it? Systematically modernist. Right. And they do exactly that. They stay away from technique and they really delve into the experience that the people have when eating the food. And I thought it was a really, really beautiful showcase of the pursuit of excellence.
I was looking, you just mentioned this disgraced chef that poisoned someone. Did you read the news? Like this happened, I think just a few days ago or last week, the latest, where there was like an infection in McDonald's in the States and someone died. And also like, also in Vitoria here in Spain. Well, that was for coli, you know, this infection that happens with meat sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And here in Vitoria I was reading this article that they published at El País, like a local newspaper, talking about why is it risky to eat medium rare burgers, mm-hmm. you know, because if you eat like a steak, these bacteria, they're on the surface.
Yes.
And they get immediately killed when you grill them.
Yep.
But of course, if you grind the meat, then you mix the whole thing and the bacteria will be inside. And if you keep the draw, they might survive, and the risk of getting poisonous by medium rare burgers is 30 times higher than if they're not.
That's crazy.
And I love eating raw burgers, you know, like.
Yeah, me too. I like both, actually. I like the medium raw burger. I like the smash burger, you know. Yeah, I mean, like what people forget with minced meat is that the surface area of the meat becomes like times a million, you know, because you cut it up and it's like you have small particles of meat that all have a surface area, you know, it's not like closed. So the bacteria can spread on the surface of this meat and it's really, really intense. I mean, what's a good alternative? Steak sandwich?
I guess a smash burger is a good alternative, or sando sandwiches.
Sando sandwiches. Hey, you know, I actually read an article just a few days ago that was saying that actually it makes sense to not serve burgers medium rare because, and the title of the article was sort of like, a burger is so juicy, you have to cook it beyond medium so that all the like moisture gets trapped, right, inside of the burger. Which I guess makes sense, but a medium rare burger is just very, very delicious.
I had a very good burger yesterday in this place in Barcelona called Vicio. It's like a burger place that is becoming trendy. And it's funny, it was a cheeseburger with truffle sauce, and the truffle sauce was nice. But it's funny, this place, because it's all like a sexualized place, you know, like with... with red lights. It's called Vicio. Then when you walk in, there is like this sign that says you're going to get your thing, you know, like, and then when you're when you're reading like the descriptions of the like in the recipe, and no, like in the receipt in the ticket, it says like this burger is like a satisfier, butter is not included, things like that, you know, and you're like everything is like somehow like, with these sex messages around everywhere, you know, like it was very funny.
That's really funny.
That's it for this week's episode of Potluck Food Talks. If you like what we're doing, make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. You can also find us on Instagram and TikTok as Potluck Food Talks. The show airs every Monday.